Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that has been a hiatus for several weeks, each of us being as careful as we can to abide by the need for quarantining during this COVID-19 pandemic. But we're returning to the air, broadcasting remotely from our respective homes, thanks to the talents of our producer-engineer, Pete Garberg. Thank you, Brother Pete. The change in our production situation reflects in some small way the changes that the pandemic is causing in the lives of us all. But since this is a show devoted to the movies, that's what we're going to be focusing on. First, we're going to reflect a bit on what the future might hold for theater going, and then we're going to share some of the best of what we've been streaming for viewing at home. Let's begin with a look at the headlines, which had to do with AMC, which is our downtown movie theater, the AMC 20, refusing to play any Universal pictures because Universal, they released the Trolls movie online. And so that's just absolutely got all the theater owners, the National Association of Theater Owners, all in a panic.
Right. Well, I mean, the problem here is that most national theater chains, so your AMCs, your Regals, your Lowe's, Landmark theaters, a lot of them have pushed back against the concept of day and date releasing, which is when a movie studio releases a movie in theaters nationwide, but puts it up online so that people can rent it at home at the same time. Theaters have obviously been afraid of that idea for a long time. And now that we're in this unusual situation and no theaters are open, Universal decided to put Trolls World Tour up online. You could rent it for $20. And it apparently, and I don't know how much we can trust these numbers anyway, it apparently made like something like $100 million in rentals in a week's time, which is more money than the original Trolls film made in the same amount of time in theaters a couple of years ago. And so now we're seeing that this model of releasing brand new movies just right out of the gate onto digital rental stores, we're seeing that it is a viable option. And so AMC got mad about that. And I don't know how long this threat is going to hold, but they have threatened not to show any Universal films because of this. Granted, they're not open right now, so I don't know if they're really in a place to threaten something like that and actually have it land with any kind of impact. And I think we should also consider the fact that Trolls 2 made a lot of money because of a lack of competition. There weren't any new films coming out, certainly with that kind of ad budget. And so it made a lot of money because people are at home and can't go anywhere.
Well, okay, I think let's talk about the model to begin with, because what's the incentive for things to go online? Oh, well, because only 20%, the studio has to give only 20% to these online platforms, whereas it gives 50% to theater owners. And the theater owners, of course, where do they make their money? Not exclusively, but in large part by selling us the, $8 bin of popcorn.
Or that costs them 11 cents to make.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, so maybe the model was askew slightly to begin with, but this sort of panics me because I am afraid, even though Dan handed me an article and it mentioned 85-inch TV in the article, and I was like, woohoo, it's still not going to replicate the theater experience. What's the end game of this spitting match?
But let's be honest here. What we're talking about is this whole pandemic forcing quickly a change that has been happening gradually, as you were explaining, Nathan. And so we have to ask, is this the wave of the future? And when was the last time any of us went to a movie and we had to fight to get a seat? Theaters, it used to be 20 years ago, as few as 20 years ago, that you would have to stand in line to get into a movie. And that doesn't happen anymore.
I also think that there is sort of a window here for innovation because, and we'll be talking about this in the second half of the show, but a lot of the indie distributors like Kino Lorber, for instance, and Film Movement, they've been putting some of their newer films up online and have allowed the indie theaters that would normally be showing those films to sort of tap into the rental profits. So if you rent a film for $12, six of that goes to the distributor and six of it goes to the art house theater that would normally be showing that film in normal times. And so, and I like that model a lot. Of course, the big studios like Universal or Warner Brothers or whoever, they don't really care, I think, about the theatrical model anyway, because if they could get rid of that middleman, they would.
Are bad. But so if you're charging six, if you're charging $12 and six goes to the theater and six goes to the distributor, then what goes back to the production company?
Well, I think probably some of that $6 going back to the distributor does go to, okay, you know, other elements of the product. I'm not totally sure. All I know is that I think that there could be a future. And I think this, what this pandemic has done has made us realize that a lot of our business models are going to have to change and might change, you know, forever. I think there is, though, the opportunity, and I think it's a good one, for films to go into theaters and onto, you know, digital platforms simultaneously, so that you can spend, say, $12 for a movie ticket and go out and have that theatrical experience, or you can opt to maybe spend a couple more dollars for that convenience fee of staying at home and watching it on your TV. And I think in a lot of cases, movies are going to make more money that way because, you know, as we know, there are fewer and fewer indie theaters in the country. A lot of those indie theaters don't have, you know, the benefit of having multiple screens where they can show a movie, you know, 10 times a day. And so in this way, a lot of documentaries and foreign films and indie, you know, features that would normally only play, say, festivals or art houses, they have a bigger audience that way. And we've seen that with, you know, a lot of the films that have gone to Netflix or Hulu or, yeah, or Prime in the past.
Yeah. So the point that all of us seem to be making here is that this is and can be a boon for small independent theaters, particularly filmmakers, films, and it also falls into that that same situation that we've seen, that these bigger films, the Avengers, all the Marvel movies, have to be bigger, louder, longer, more heavily produced, simply to attract an audience. Now, and that's what you're going to want to see in a theater. And that seems to be where things are going. But some of the movies that we'll be talking about in the second half, those are movies that are absolutely fine watching at home.
And right. But I'm gonna tell people, do the math here. I mean, because you and I belong to the AMC, all of us belong to the AMC Stubbs, you know, mm-hmm, AMS program. So for $22 a month, I can see up to 12 movies in the theater. Whereas at home, if they're charging $20 a pop and there's only two of us, for example, that's not a good deal. If you have a family of 12, sure, then it's a really, really good deal, especially if you make your own snacks. But I think I'm not seeing that this whole transition, I think we could end up getting ripped off.
Well, yeah, but you're talking about the consumer, and that's
great. I miss the consumer.
Absolutely. But in terms of the movie companies themselves, we're talking about what they're going to be forced to do to face the future here. And if the future is doing what you're talking about, charging us a little bit more money than, say, you know, the $22 a month we pay individually to see AMC movies, well, so be it. I mean,
well, and the whole model of the, you know, the theater subscription app, because pretty much all major theater chains have that now, that was designed to get people to keep coming into the theater. If they're losing money in ticket sales, they can make up for it in foot traffic, which, as you said, goes right to the candy counter where they make a lot more profit, or their margins are significantly higher. And I don't think that the success of Trolls World Tour is a good control anyway for this experiment, because there are too many weird variables here. I think for us to understand how this kind of model will work going forward, we're going to have to see what happens if a similar strategy is applied to a movie at a time when theaters are open again. So let's say 5 months down the road, you've got the new Marvel movie coming out, and Marvel says, hey, we're going to put this in theater so you can go see the spectacle with a crowd and with a great sound system and a big screen, or you can spend the same amount of money or maybe a little bit more and you can watch it at home. And then we'll see if that's a viable option. Because if people decide, you know, if they vote for one or the other.
I want to tell people that, you know, now that we've gotten accustomed to wearing our leisure wear all the time, I just want to say that sometimes we go to the first morning movie, and you can wear your jammies to the theater too. So if that's a concern for anyone, you know, probably not lingerie, but like jammies.
I don't know. It depends on the movie.
What movies are you going to?
Not really. The one thing that I want to add here is the one thing that we haven't taken into consideration is how this is going to affect movie going itself in terms of how socially distant are we going to be from other people? How many tickets are they going to sell in a 300 seat theater? Are they going to sell only 150? That's what the Magic Lantern was doing in the last week or so before it closed. So
right.
I guess what we're saying here, none of us are economists. And so none of us can really see the long run here. We can only see potential of what might happen. But I think that it's clear that things are going to change, at least in the short run, if not, to use the famous word that people say, oh, things are going to change forever. Who knows about forever? But throughout this summer, it's not going to be like any summer we've seen in summers past. So at any rate, we need to take a break here. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue this week's discussion about the status of movie going in this era of the COVID-19 pandemic. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
What's your social distancing routine? Online meetings with coworkers? FaceTime with your grandkids? Wash your hands? If part of your routine involves tuning in to Spokane Public Radio for news, entertainment, music, and more, then I'd like you to add one more thing to your list. Make a donation today. The most important thing you can do to support Spokane Public Radio is to become a sustaining member. Thank you for being a part of our community. We couldn't do it without you. Become a member today, or make an extra donation at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Now go wash your hands again, just to be safe.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Toothart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed some of the ways in which movie going is changing because of concerns over the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Let's continue our talk and in the process share some of what we've been watching at home through our respective streaming services that we've particularly liked. Why don't you begin, Nathan?
So we should say that the Magic Lantern, our beloved Spokane Art House Theater, has made a number of films available to rent right now through their site, which is magiclanternonmain.com. There's 15 or so films on there, documentaries, indies, foreign films. You can rent from about $10 to $13. And some of that money, as we talked about in the first half of the show, directly benefits the theater. So all of these movies that we're talking about are available that way. And I'll start with a documentary called Once Were Brothers. And this is in a long line of movies we've got recently, these kind of retrospective history docs about the music of the 60s and 70s. So last year alone, we had Echo in the Canyon and Rolling Thunder Review and movies about Linda Ronstadt and David Crosby and Leonard Cohen. And this film is about the band, and it chronicles their history, sort of how they came together as players for Ronnie Hawkins and then touring as Bob Dylan's backing band during his controversial Electric phase, and then how they became sort of a well-respected group on their own, creating these hits like The Wait and The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down before breaking up in sort of a famously fractious and public way. And this movie, Once Were Brothers, is told pretty much exclusively through the point of view of band leader and primary songwriter Robbie Robertson. And all but one other member of the band is, other than Robertson, is dead. And so they can't really weigh in here.
Yeah, Garth Hudson being the only other one alive.
Correct. And that's an issue for a lot of band fans. Robertson is not actually a beloved figure amongst band fans. Because he sort of has twisted the band's history to kind of make himself look better, supposedly. And drummer Levon Helm, who is the only American out of this group of otherwise Canadian musicians, spoke about that before he died as well. So that's the same issue that we saw with The Last Waltz, which is the Martin Scorsese concert film about the band, a famous film. And so from 1978, right? And it dogs this movie as well. I'm a big fan of the band. In fact, I had them on my turntable before I hopped on here to talk to you guys. And so there wasn't anything in this film that was particularly revelatory for me. If you don't know the music or you don't know the story, it might be interesting. Again, you're getting a blinkered viewpoint. But it was really good to hear this music again. I mean, the band wrote some of the greatest rock songs ever. The archival footage is really interesting. So it's a good watch. Just know that you're getting a one-sided documentation of everything.
Yeah, I want to quickly go to Mary Pat and her movie. But the thing I want to say is that just because you're getting Robertson's point of view doesn't mean it's the wrong point of view. I mean, as the movie points out, it's a perspective. As the movie points out, a lot of these guys, Danko, Manuel, and Helm, all engaged in a whole lot of drug taking in the late 70s. And so consequently, Robertson, who's a teetotaler and who doesn't take drugs, was the responsible one. So, I mean, you can make an argument anyway. I think the important thing is the music itself carries on. So, Mary Pat, what are you going to share with us?
Well, yes. So I'm going to talk about the film St. Francis, which we had heard a lot about before we actually had the opportunity to see the film.
Because it played at the Spokane International Film Festival and won an award there, actually.
Yes, it did. And for some reason, we missed it, or I missed it. But this is a film that, you know, has this feel that there's something in this film that should appeal to almost every woman. Because it really is about the sort of life cycle of one particular woman over the course of a summer. But nevertheless, it touches on, you know, these much broader themes. So we are introduced to a woman who's working as a waitress, Bridget, and she is actually the filmmaker, plays the lead part as well. And so she is working as a waitress. You know, she's dissatisfied with what's going on. She's 34 years old. She can't really find a relationship that works for her. We discover over the course of, you know, the sort of expose introductory materials that at one point she was attending Northwestern and was sort of viewed as the, you know, among her group of writing friends, at college age writing friends, she was viewed as possibly the next thing, maybe even a Lena Dunham sort of character. But for reasons that are never 100% clear, and I think that's okay, she doesn't end up pursuing that path. And so she agrees sort of almost inexplicably and suddenly to take a nanny job for the summer with a couple who have a young daughter, a female couple. They have a young daughter who's 6 years old, Frances, and she is awaiting the arrival of her baby sister. So it's sort of mundane on one level, but it's a transformative experience of this young woman who realizes that things that maybe she's been longing for, that she feels like she's missed out on, are really not what she needs to be doing for herself. So she starts off as a very reluctant and maybe even bad caretaker for this young girl. And it ends up that they form this sort of special bond and relationship as she does with the two parents. And so nothing happens and everything happens at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the way that you describe it, it might sound like St. Francis is sort of a cloying, kind of too charming indie movie, but Kelly O'Sullivan, who's the star, and as you mentioned, wrote the film, she plays this indecisive and sometimes straight up unlikable protagonist. And so I sort of appreciated the caustic edge of it. It wasn't nearly the kind of twee festival film I expected it to be.
Right. And so we're running out of time here, but I wanted to give a very quick shout out to a movie that played for a week at the Magic Lantern before things closed down, Extraordinary, which is an Irish movie, actually, directed by Mike Ahern and Enda Lauman. And it's a weird, weird movie. The stand-up comic Maeve Higgins plays a woman who has, she's a driving instructor, but she has extraordinary paranormal connections. Consequently, she's called in to try to save this guy, exorcise the demons from this guy's daughter, blah, 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 blah. Will Forte plays, who seems really miscast here, but with all these really good Irish actors, plays a guy who is the antithesis of the Higgins character. I think the reason really to watch this is to watch Maeve Higgins, because her presence in the film was funny from the get-go. Not har, har, laugh, laugh, big laugh funny, but comedic and supportive and understanding. So I actually like Extraordinary, and it's a decent adult family film, if you might speak.
I want to mention again that all those movies we talked about and many more, again, you can rent them from the Magic Lantern, magiclanternonmaine.com.
Right. And what was it that before we
film
head out, you wanted
yeah.
to talk about? You wanted to talk about film festivals a bit, Nathan, didn't you?
Right. So one of the many things that has happened, one of the many victims of the shutdowns are big events. And so, of course, that includes film festivals. So Cannes has been shut down, Telluride, all of those. And one of the first to fall was South by Southwest. And so in the wake of their cancellation, they have put a handful of the films that were going to play at the festival up on Amazon Prime. And so through Wednesday, May 6th, you can access, as long as you have a free Amazon account, you can access a small handful of narrative features, documentary features, and a couple dozen shorts that normally you'd only be able to see at South By. So it's a cool way of seeing these movies that I think otherwise would have fallen right through the cracks, maybe wouldn't have gotten picked up by distributors. And you can kind of make your own festival in your living room if you want.
That's right. And we have to emphasize that these are festival movies. The ones that you've watched and Mary Pat and I've watched are not exactly films that are going to attract a lot of people at the AMC.
They're dark, I think is what we could say, which you might not want right now. But if it sounds like your kind of thing, it's there for you.
Yeah. And with that, it's time to close. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And along with my co-hosts, Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart, we've been discussing the state of today's movie scene, and we shared some of what we've deemed worthy enough to watch at home. As always, we thank Pete Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, especially under these socially distant circumstances. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember these words from Albert Camus' novel, The Plague. I have no idea what's awaiting me or what will happen when this all ends. For the moment, I know this. There are sick people, and they need curing. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.